up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello, once again, welcome to this edition of New Horizons. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Today, the final part in our series on the Human Rights Oration held in Melbourne on the 7th of December last year. We continue this week the panel discussion. This is part two of that discussion. Here's Kristen Hilton, Victoria's Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commissioner.
Juliet, you've worked in the diversity and inclusion space for many years and looking at ways in which businesses can benefit from a diverse workforce. Graham mentioned in his talk things like targets. How important are targets in the world that you see?
I think we have to set our sights on what it is that we want to achieve. And I thought the video that you prepared earlier was fantastic in terms of identifying, for example, the number of buses. Was it 25% that don't have access to them? And when you put a number out there, then
that's
you
Pat's
know...
That's Pat's infographics, so good on you, Pat, wherever you are.
It was great. It was great. Then you know what it is that you want to achieve. And businesses all run on targets. We're constantly putting out what we want to achieve in terms of client service, in terms of connectivity with the market. It's no different in putting a target out there in relation to aspects of who we are as people, our demography.
So when we talk about the change in attitudes that's needed to meaningfully include people with disabilities in the workplace, how do you see that working in corporate Australia? Where have there been real successes been?
I think, notwithstanding the comments that Graham made about where we're going to in Australia, one amazing thing that I've seen happen over the last 5 years is a move from a discussion about diversity to inclusion. And diversity puts it as something other. It puts it as sort of into a box. That's not my diversity, therefore I don't connect with it. Whereas inclusion is a broader conversation because all of us as humans want to be included in the group. We are social animals. So I think reframing it has then opened up the discussion for others to enter. Now, I think another thing that's happened at the same time is there's been a feeling of generalised exclusion through globalisation and people losing their jobs. So we're in this state of tension at the moment. We know what inclusion is. Not everyone's feeling included. There are new groups of people who are actually feeling excluded. And I wonder two things. We could take two different paths on that. We could go the path of bigotry, which says it's all about me and you have caused my problems, sort of victimising the victims, so to speak. But we can take another path as well. I think those that have been newly excluded can actually form empathy and connection to those people who've been historically excluded. So actually that second path is a way to say, now I share your experience, although it's not directly on all fours, but I feel something, I feel connected. If this is what you were trying to express to me, I now understand it. So I'm also an optimist, and I hope that what we're seeing in terms of Brexit and Trump in the US is actually a blip on the radar, and the human spirit will come together.
Sometimes when we talk about working flexibly or part-time, we mention the importance of technology to allow us to do that. I'm wondering how important, this is a question to all of the panel, how important technology is or is going to be in terms of making workplaces more inclusive. Marianne, perhaps start with you.
Technology, certainly in my life, has made a huge difference, opened up access to so much more information than I would have ever dreamed of. I think for persons with disabilities, it can make a huge difference about where you work. You know, for people who live in areas where getting to a workplace can be difficult, you know, we see more and more people working from home or from different locations. That will open up a lot of access to information. However, it comes also with cost. People with disabilities, as high numbers are unemployed, don't have large amounts of money to get themselves equipment and whatever they need to prepare for work, I think is a challenge. Not something that can't be overcome, but it needs to be recognised. And often some of the programs that even exist to support people with with reasonable accommodation for their jobs, they've got to get the job first. So it's a bit of a difficult thing if you've got to get the job before you can get support to buy equipment, but you can't demonstrate that you can do the job without the equipment. So that's a challenge. So I think it has huge potential, but some challenges to be overcome.
How much of it is about money? So some businesses, certainly when we hear complaints from people who have been in the workplace and have been discriminated against, the employer will often talk about being unable to make reasonable adjustments because of the expense of those adjustments. Is that a real thing?
Well, Kristen, there are many people with disabilities who don't require any workplace changes to work. Many people, probably more than the majority. 90% of people who do require changes, the cost is less than $500. And so there's only 10% where there's a higher technological cost. And there's a government program to pay for that cost anyway. So it's not about money. It's not about technology. You know, there are three people on this stage whose employment has been facilitated by technology. I mean, Neil's another classic example of that. It's about attitude. It's about that change of mindset. It's about not saying, oh, this won't work because of A, B, C, and D. It's about saying, I think I could make this work. It really is a change of attitude.
One of the questions that we've received from audience members prior to the event talked about the particular issues for people in rural and regional areas where there may be less opportunities for work. What's your, again, a question to the whole panel, are there particular strategies or things that we need to do in those areas where there are less opportunities to ensure that people with disabilities are included in the workforce?
I think the internet has made a big difference in a range of ways. Firstly, teleworking is far more available to people with disabilities, and I'm not saying that it's the only option for people with disabilities, but for many people, particularly people in rural areas, teleworking is a very valuable option. But the other thing that the internet has done is that it allows us to share information and experiences. And I've seen on the internet some amazing stories about people with disabilities working farms, working in rural areas and working in other occupations that we weren't able to find out about before the internet was available to us. So I think it is right that it's harder for a person with a disability to get jobs in rural areas, but I think it's easier now than it was 10 or 20 years ago.
I have a slightly different view. Maybe we're looking at different data on this, but I actually think it's hardest in a city, because in a city you're an anonymous being. And in a country town, if we're talking country towns here, often the community rallies around you. And I just did a piece of research on this. Even in small sort of villagey suburbs, the community knows you as an individual and will adjust themselves to assist, will keep businesses going that include someone with a disability, or keep that person into the business. Mm. Whereas I think cities are often places that people get lost.
Mm. Neil, did you want to add something to that?
Well, I was just going to say, talk about the internet thing that Graham was talking about. That's the Paralympics promotional film that I was just being involved with, which was a fantastic opportunity. All came through the internet, just from somebody seeing me do a little clip on YouTube. It does offer lots of opportunities, which is it's been a huge thing. And the other thing that you're talking about, that it's technology is important, but to be inspired to change or to find something, or it's an attitude. Attitude change is really important too. There was an incident recently where a young man lost his arm in a motorcycle accident, and he was a builder. And my amputation person at the hospital said, "Look, he's suicidal. He can't face the future. Can you come and talk to him?" And so I brought my saxophone and played it to him. And he went home and started researching tools for building.
Yep.
So it's kind of a sharing, sharing of ideas is really important.
That peer power is really extraordinary. And the internet has made the sharing of those stories so much more widespread and inspirational.
Just on that peer support and that encouragement, but also is there a sense of competition, Julia, in the corporate sector, that there are companies or organisations that want to get really good at this, so there's a healthy competition to have the best diversity practice? Is that a positive thing?
Oh, definitely. If you think about the business world, it is run by highly competitive people, and they want to be competitive about anything that you put in front of them. And if it's disability as a target, or if it's some gender, or if it's racial diversity, then they'll want to go after that as well. Mm. And I remember doing a series of interviews with the male champions of change, asking them why did they get involved and why did they stay involved with this organisation which is advocating for equality for women. And they came because of a connection, because someone had called them and said, do you want to be part of it? Mm. They stayed because they couldn't afford to leave the room.
Yep.
Because if they left the room, then someone else would have actually won. And Alan Jones was quite upfront about this. He says, I'm competitive, I want to win. Mm. And we can harness that sense of achievement, is another way of putting competition, harness the desire to achieve, particularly in relation to people with a disability.
We are nearly at the end of our time, so I'm just going to ask if there are any panel members that like to make some closing remarks or messages of encouragement to the audience.
I think Graham summed up pretty well in his oration at the end. Put out the challenge to everyone. You know, go out and seek people with disability. Make it your business. Make it a target. I was always against targets, but I'm starting to shift and thinking that that probably is the way, you know, something you can measure is what people do. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, encourage everyone, every business, to see themselves as employers of persons with disabilities as well as making their business inclusive for people with disabilities as customers as well.
Yeah, the decision-making in this process sits with individuals, with a whole range, thousands of individuals across Australia. And I think it is all about that change of mindset, that change of attitude, and just using those words. They're little words, but they're really powerful words. And that's what I would leave with people. You start on Monday.
And I think that what we think about disability, what we think about LGBTI, what we think about gender and racial diversity, all of these things are deeply interwoven with each other. We are not a single identity, just a person with a disability or just a person with a certain religious background. And I would commend each of us to find connections with other people instead of being fragmented. What the world needs now is actually for us to join up and have a single voice around these issues, not be fragmented along these distinct lines.
And it's not a cost, it's an investment,
yes.
I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's a great note to end the panel discussion. Can you thank our panellists?
And that was the final in our series on the recently held Human Rights Oration. Over the last few weeks, we've been discussing the expression of interest for the role of Executive Officer for Blind Citizens Australia. That process has closed, and hopefully next week we'll be able to give you some more information and some more details on all things BCA. So listen for that next episode of New Horizons. Blind Citizens Australia can be contacted, as always, by telephone on 1-800-033-660, that's 1-800-033-660, or by email on bca@bca.org.au. It's also worth remembering that while Blind Citizens Australia does receive government funding, it relies on donations from the members and from the community. If you'd like to donate to BCA, there are a number of ways in which you may do so. Have a look at the website or get in touch with the main office to find out how to do that. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Do take care until next we meet to look to new horizons.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams. Of our dreams.